This is Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm your host, David Wilk. I'm talking to Jeff Gomez today. The main reason he's here today is as the author of The Ten Commandments of Successful Corporate Narratives, which he co-wrote with Alan Berkson. But there's much more than just this book, and we're going to talk about a lot more than this book. I think this book kind of, in a short way, summarizes a lot of the things that you've been working on for a really long time. And I will preface by saying you and I have crossed paths in a couple of different places over the years, bookish, you know, adjacent media stuff. And I've always enjoyed talking to you because I think you're one of the smartest guys I've ever met. So I'm really glad to have you here.
Oh, thank you, David. It's so good to be here and so great. It's been some years since we last met, but great to see you here.
Yeah, I'm glad to have the excuse to talk to you again. You know, it's good. So I think the best way to start, because I'm assuming a lot of the people listening in may not have heard of you or know of your work, you have a business called Starlight Runner Entertainment, which is kind of the evolution of your work in media. And you've done a lot of things that I think have been revolutionary is probably a bad, you know, maybe bad word to choose, but you've really you've been at this core of a lot of the development of new thinking about media as it is applied. I think you said to me before we started, you're not a theoretician, you're a practitioner. And I think that's really important because of, you know, that it, you have that experience. But maybe you should just go back a little bit, summarize your work from the beginning to where you are now. I know you don't want to take the whole
time. No, I get it. Through your lens, though, as a very shy, slightly neurodivergent little boy who grew up in a kind of chaotic environment, I sought escape through books and loved stories. The bigger, the deeper, the richer, the better. And getting lost in the worlds that were described in those books was just thrilling and also kind of gave me tips on living, on succeeding at life. The best story worlds contained systems of wisdom that allowed me to kind of figure out how to apply what it is that I was taking from those stories to my life. And that allowed me to figure out how to socially navigate and how to speak well and tell stories myself. I became interested in the techniques that these authors were using to be so convincing. You know, I was very aware of my own reality, which was harsh. How did they create these fantastical realities? What did Tolkien do to convince me absolutely in the veracity of Middle-earth and these characters? And for some reason, I chose to pursue that, to understand the mechanisms of story. And by extension, the dynamics between audience and story. Everything changed with the advent of the DARPANET and the bulletin boards and the nascent internet. That's where I started to realize way back in the 1980s that story was about to change. There was going to be a participative quality to story. And that really excited me and informed everything I did after that.
Yeah, so I think that's really at the core of your work. You know, I think you coined the phrase transmedia as a way of encompassing that. And I think I remember when I first met you, we did talk about this idea of worlds and world building and what makes a world. And I kind of connected in my thinking to some people I've read and talked to about brands. You know, the theory of a brand is that you're creating a narrative, a story that people can understand in not always linear ways, and that they are emotionally attached to brands because the brands, they respond to the meaning of that brand, and the brand is telling them a story. And the brand is like a summary of all of the things that it means. And I think in some ways, the way story works in media has to be the same kind of thing. You know, human beings we respond to stories. It's like innately in our being. And I don't know whether it's part of our, the way we evolved in consciousness. It seems that it is, because stories have been the way we explain the world. The world being an, you know, you mentioned that your world was complicated and challenging. And I think about our forebears going back thousands of years, trying to imagine what it was like to make sense out of the world, which was threatening and difficult and challenging. No one got on the news to explain to them what the weather was. That was just something that happened. And so they created stories to understand that sensory input. And so maybe that literally has become part of human beingness, that story is the way we explain the world to ourselves.
There's no doubt about it. And so even the most ancient of narratives were instructive. A lot of people call cave paintings a celebration or mythologization of the hunt, but really they were instructive. The young person looked at that wall and it was like a little instruction book, you know? And so were the explanations that shaman gave to their tribe around the fire. And these evolved into these rich, sophisticated mythologies. Look back at ancient Greek narratives. These were many mini narratives that were woven into this tapestry. Sometimes they kind of contradicted themselves, but they were huge, sprawling tapestries of narrative, as simple as a short story and as elaborate as the Odyssey or the Iliad.
Right.
So today's Star Wars or Marvel is merely more of the same. And the notion of transmedia goes all the way back to those times, because you saw the narratives on pottery, in statues, in the earliest of writings and artwork. So this is something that we've continued to do. My interest in all this, of course, was wanting to stay in the fantasy world, but the story would run out. There are only 79 hours of the original Star Trek series. So you wanted to read the James Blish novels of Star Trek, some of which were pretty good, and stay in that universe. So as my career evolved, I adapted the term transmedia. I came up with the term kind of autonomously, but then realized that it had existed. Marcia Kinder coined the term in the early 90s. Henry Jenkins was using the term actively before I started to use it, and then his peanut butter got in my chocolate. So the notion that there can be a design sensibility to telling a story across a number of different media platforms in concert, that was a relatively novel idea that I put to work in the 1990s with projects like Magic the Gathering or Turok Dinosaur Hunter. And those were very successful and allowed me to form a company in 2000 called Starlight Runner. And we began to kind of elegantly design these complex story worlds for various clients, or extend them so that the investment dollars made into these very expensive entertainment projects could be maximized, and the narratives extended across different platforms. So yes, you're right, David, they were brands. You know, they started out as individual movies or TV shows and then became transmedia brands.
Culturally iconic. And that, you know, the story that you, I think you've written about, and I think I remember you telling me when you were doing this, was working with Pirates of the Caribbean. And what I remembered was only that you had worked with them on trying to help them define the meaning of Pirates of the Caribbean in terms of, to make it consistent across all of the work that Disney was doing. But in the written piece that I read, I can't remember, I think it was online, you wrote about that experience, and maybe you could just talk about it a little bit here, because I think it is really important how you were able to figure out how Pirates meshed with the Disney brand, which is like a massive brand.
Sure. It was so exciting. I mean, there's an example, David, of me talking about how fascinated I was with the notion of transmedia universes and the process of understanding a world so that when it manifests across different media, it feels authentic. It feels like a part of the world that I love. And that comes out of me being a fan, not me wanting to necessarily help a corporation maximize every dollar. But those two things kind of, gelled together. And Oren Aviv, the chief creative officer of the Walt Disney Company, invited me to apply these notions to Pirates of the Caribbean. The challenge that they were facing was that the first movie was enormously successful, and yet not everybody was sure exactly why. And it was a kind of dark story, if you remember that original Pirates of the Caribbean, a little bit violent and so forth. So how was it Disney? How is it resonant with the Disney brand? And how can the various divisions of this global company leverage this intellectual property in ways that were authentic to the brand, and not somebody's, wildly different interpretation of the brand? And so that was the challenge they gave to me. And a lot of it had to do with my coming to understand exactly what the meaning of Pirates of the Caribbean was, right? So just the same way as I deconstructed Tolkien's process for creating the Lord of the Rings, understanding what it is that he was fundamentally trying to say through this epic work of fantasy, I did the same thing with Pirates of the Caribbean. And my team, who I trained, took the whole thing apart, and we interviewed people like Jerry Bruckheimer and Johnny Depp and the writers and directors of the films. And we found those elements. And also, we studied the Walt Disney Company. What did they mean? What was Walt Disney himself trying to communicate about himself and the Disney brand all those years? And we found these bridges between the two that were poignant and delightful. And we realized, doing the impossible is fun is something that is an ethos of the Walt Disney Company, but it's also the ethos of Jack Sparrow in the middle of Pirates of the Caribbean. And click, the door was opened, and we were able to give Disney a universe and a mythology that they could readily extend.
So let's now kind of shift a little bit and talk about how you would apply that to when you talk to people in business. As your book lays out the 10 commandments of successful corporate narratives, what you're really trying to help people understand is how do they define themselves in story, and what that means to them both. It's almost like they have to figure out who they are before they can tell that story to anybody else. So what spurred you to apply your work in media to talking to people in business?
Alan Berkson spurred me. As a kind of fantasist, my concentration was on these giant fantasy and science fiction properties. But my longtime partner and supporter and friend, Alan Berkson, told me, what you're trying to tell companies to do with Transformers and Pirates of the Caribbean and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is that these mythologies, these contemporary mythologies, as we pointed out, are more important than the individuals who work at these companies. If they're grand enough, if they have something to say to uplift the people, they should be carefully served. And therefore, the companies that own these brands need to behave. they need to honor the brands and the fans of these intellectual properties. So Alan said, why shouldn't they do this with all of their products and brands? Why shouldn't a company live up to the very ethos that supports these products and brands. And he convinced me that if I spoke this way to companies, that maybe a few of them would snap out of it and behave better and understand that if they didn't behave authentically and engage directly in dialogue with their millions of consumers through social media, they were doomed. Because all it takes these days is for a handful of people to suddenly get the sense that something's wrong with your company or your brand or your product, to start a fire that's going to be a big problem for you.
Yeah, it's sort of reminding me a little bit about Malcolm Gladwell's book, Remember the Tipping Point, that people are in our connected world are hyper vigilant, that they want the promises that they've been made to be kept. And they want the brands and products that they are interacting with to be who they say they're going to be. That's kind of what you're saying. And that, you know, when you look at those tipping points, like with something that was like Hush Puppies, I always remember this, you know, that why would Hush Puppies come back? Because people thought they were cool. And it's that the power of people's imaginations supersedes the power of the product makers, you know, that you have to be like, what, and that you, I think you mentioned this, it's so easy for a really good, long-lasting brand now to disappear.
Yes.
And I think I read this today. I didn't see the whole article, but something about State Farm is going to change all of their customer service to AI. And the writer of the article said, are you sure you want to take 104 years of brand and entrust it to AI? Now, I'm not saying that it's an automatically a bad idea, but just, will humans respond to a replacement that may not understand them in the authentic way that they're used to being understood? And I think these, you know, when you're talking about these kinds of things, you're reminding people that the rules have changed. And I think you talk about this, you've spent a lot of time studying Joseph Campbell and the hero's journey. That's the core of everything, of storytelling, essentially, the hero's journey. And you've said that that's no longer operative in the same way that it was. And that helps to explain why storytelling is going to be different or is different now. But I think that applies to business, to almost everything in our lives today. And I think you've alluded to that. You talk about that, how it affects our political life as well. And I think that's really important. I think you should talk about that, you know, your take on that now.
Sure, sure. Well, look, the hero's journey, which I believe that's a real thing. Joseph Campbell is certainly valid in his exploration and understanding of the hero's journey. And a lot of people don't understand how deep, rich, and complex his work has been, because it's so highly simplified in Hollywood and advertising and so forth. But it's essentially this cyclic process of kind of getting ready to go out into the world, entering into a series of tests and conflicts, and in essence, defeating or overcoming those conflicts. Usually it's an antagonist, a villain in contemporary popular culture. And you come home bringing the treasure that you found out there to your community and live happily ever after. That process emerges out of our primitive minds. And in prehistoric times, life was rough. So conflict was life and death. And so that impulse to assert your rightness on wrongness, or your survival instinct on the enemy that was standing in front of you, or the prey for that matter, is hardwired into our minds. What I have been asking my colleagues and corporations and media companies to consider of late is that we are no longer in this solo cyclic process. As human beings, we have become a network, a massive and highly complicated tangle of interconnectivity. Alan calls it pervasive communications. And if we remain in this hero's journey cycle, when we come across something that appears to be challenging or appears to be not right, at least from our sensibilities, we immediately assert our sense of right on that wrongness or stand up to confront that challenge. And that is creating chaos. And it's a wash across huge swaths of social media. And the powers that be, they understand that. They know how to monetize it. And they know how to make it work for them. It took a little while, but they certainly do now. And that has led us down what I think is a dangerous path. We've lost the narrative thread of our collective ethos, our collective value system, and our aspirations to become a better people. So I am advocating for a new modality of narrative. It's called systemic narrative. My nickname for it is collective journey,
rather than hero's journey. I think
right.
That's good.
It's a collective journey. Yeah. And a collective journey is all of us within the same story world, you know, almost as if it's a giant diamond or gem floating in space, and we're all the different facets. And there's a flaw in that gem. The flaw is not a human being. It's a problem with our system. And there are people who are taking advantage of that problem. That problem can be as conceptual as there is abundance and there is scarcity, right? Really, there's kind of abundance in the world. But there's the perception of scarcity that is imposed on people, and it becomes real after it's imposed. And we have problems with that. There are people who really feel that they are without. I was one of them, certainly. So instead of destroying the bad guy who is taking advantage of that abundant scarcity or whatever that flaw is, because once you do, what's going to happen, David? Another guy's going to take his place like tomorrow, right? One CEO goes, the next one pops right in. So that's not the answer. The answer is let's fix the healthcare system or whatever that flaw genuinely is. So that's turning our attention away from the evil bad guy, the villain, and towards systemic repair. There's plenty of action and adventure to be had in that storytelling. But it's I think it's a significant shift in the way that stories can be told, a shift that leverages this networked and interconnected communication system.
So you want to be like it's collective journey is reimagining the journey. And instead of seeing danger, which is sort of ties in with a fight or flight, you know, response. Is either to go around you see a hole in the road, instead of jumping over it, fix it, you know, or tell your, you know, there are all different ways of looking at it, but it's basically saying it isn't as simple as it looked before. We operate on a kind of simplistic modality and we need to recognize the complexity. I wish that in a way the movie The Matrix had not taken that term, The Matrix, because it's such a good one and it really does apply. We live, you know, it's a very, as you said, complex system. So it, you know, almost like the human body itself, very difficult to decode. I mean, I think it's wonderful and mysterious that, you know, despite hundreds of years of trying to figure it out, we barely understand how the human body works, much less how the universe works. But we know that it's really complicated. And I think a lot about this that I remember reading this in an anthropology class that, you know, human beings, our systems are built to filter out sensory input because there's so much of it. And we need to simplify in order to be able to function because there's just so many synapses that we have that can work at the same time. And I think what you're talking about is that we need to evolve and become more, recognize complexity and not be afraid of it and not try to simplify it and make, break things down into sort of Jungian terminology. You know, it's not just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it's probably 1,000 different things going on at the same time that we don't fully understand. And so the danger that we're in, of course, is that we don't adapt fast enough.
That's right. That's right. So that means that what we all need to do is to up our game when it comes to reconciling ideas, reconciling between each other, being able to hold paradox in our hands and accept the fact that paradox exists, you know, but also to recognize the fact that some of these systems are antiquated. They don't have to be as corrupt and harmful as they are right now. They're bearing themselves. We see them with our own eyes, and we don't have to accept the fact that they are going to persist or must persist forever. We are smart enough together to be able to affect some change. There's evidence for this in ages past, the Age of Enlightenment, you know, the whole 1960s. You know, we have been able to evolve, and it feels as if we're looking at a point in time where we may just have to.
I think it's hard to disagree with that. So maybe
advocating for us to explore new modalities of narrative. Let's tell stories that teach us to pattern our behaviors in different ways, so we don't get sucked into facile conflicts and wind up destroying each other, you know, or ignoring the meta crisis, you know, these various interlinked global issues that feel overwhelming, and we become anxious and can't do anything about them. That's not true. We can, but we need to train our minds through story, a new kind of storytelling, in order to deal with it. That's what the book is about, 10 Commandments of Successful Corporate Narratives, but it's also what all my work is about.
So I think that you probably don't need this advice, but besides the book for business, you should probably write another one for cultural and political milieu, because I think, not being critical, but that it's a business book means that people who are interested in business will read it, and they should. But I think you're really aiming for a broader audience in the way you're talking about it right now. So that's your next book.
No, David, you're absolutely right. I have that book is in, like, you know, 100 different pieces all across my hard drives. And the problem has been that things have been changing so quickly that I have to come up with, you know, why is unprecedented happening every single day?
Every day. And you know, in terms of books, you know, I love books, but it's also the book, the process of making books, which I do all the time, it's slow. Even when we try to go fast, we cannot keep up with the rate of change. And the fact that you might write something today and want to change it 6 months from now, well, your book is already published. So I really feel like there's a challenge for us to try to figure out other ways of making information available. And, you know, as a book person, it's sort of sacrilegious to say, but I don't want to get rid of books, and I don't want to get rid of anything else. I want something new. I want to see a new form that allows us to tell stories that are changeable, that can be edited, changed, modified, and have interactivity also with readers, you know, like a platform. And I bet somebody's invented it. In fact, I think of someone who probably has, but it's not popularized. You know, people don't, and it may be that it's not possible to add yet one more form of reading on top of everything else that we have because we're so busy. But if what, you know, what feels like what you have to say could be published in a different way.
Here's David, you're a prophet. Because what's happening, and I know I get some pushback on this a little bit here and there, is that artificial intelligence, the platforms that are emerging, that are driven by AI, are a new medium. They're a distinct new medium. It's a new media platform. And the content that is going to be developed, produced, and disseminated through that platform is going to be what you are describing. It's a kind of content that will allow for direct and personal communication, but that communication will be able to listen to the audience member and engage them in direct participation in a conversation that is informed by the body of this work. And that body may not just be a novel, it may be a persistently updating but authenticated body of information that will also be able to manifest or pull in a video and graphics and things like that, that can allow for you to have an alive communication, an ongoing communication with it. One that is not generative per se, one that is directly informed a little bit upstream by the author. I'm seeing tool sets in development right now that will allow for this and that are not generative, meaning the repurposing of content from the internet. That's kind of exciting to me.
That sounds exciting to me very much.
And that's where it's all going.
Well, we will wait for that. In the meantime, I did want to ask you sort of like, you have some other books in the pipeline. So aside from this one, I know you wanted you've got something coming from Marvel.
Well, back in the fantasy world, I have created a story world universe called Deep Down about it's a police procedural, a thriller set in the New York City subway system. and that's a comic book series that will be compiled into a kind of graphic novel later this year. I also have this coming out in just a couple of weeks toward the end of July. This is a colossal Ultraman omnibus. one of my story worlds that I've been working on for the past 7 years is the universe of the Japanese superhero Ultraman.
Love Ultraman.
And, it's just thrilling for me. And this is a compilation of the last several years of comic books that I worked on with Marvel based on the character. And Ultraman gets to meet the Avengers and so forth. It's so cool. And there's another universe that I'm inventing called Soccer Gods, and that's a trading card collection for kids, where the myths and legends and ancient gods of different cultures around the world get together every so often to have a colossal cosmic soccer tournament that helps to steer and guide human hopes and aspirations.
I like that. I like that. Yeah.
So I get to have a lot of fun, even though often I have to think about some serious stuff.
Well, I think you mentioned this early on that you were a fan, and I think that's a really crucial point, that you are authentically in love with what you are doing, and that makes it real. You know, it's not just product. It's not just, hey, I got this gig, you know, I'm going to figure out how to make a brand. You know, this is like, you're really into it. And if you're not into it, it doesn't work.
David, those great authors, they handed me a ladder that allowed me to climb out of a life that I did not prefer into a life of my dreams. you know, those authors and some teachers who gave me those books. that's amazing. What better thing is there to do than to just do that? So if I can help build ladders and send them down to people who would like to give it a climb, there's no better thing I can think of to do.
That is terrific. Well, I really appreciate it, Jeff. This has been really fun talking to you, and I hope we will get a chance to talk again, perhaps in person at some point. So thanks a lot.
Fantastic, Jaden. Thank you.
This has been Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I've been talking to Jeff Gomez, and while we've been really talking about the 10 commandments of successful corporate narratives that he co-authored with Alan Berkson, we've been talking about a lot more, and I really had a great time talking to you, Jeff. Thank you.